also teased at the top of the hour, Connor is, he's got an interesting topic for today's Boyack review. Today he's going to be discussing the fact that every single person running for like these local offices, city council and whatnot, there is none of them that are pro-liberty. That, I mean, this is scary. I mean, it's bad enough that we don't have anybody except maybe a Ron Paul, maybe a Gary Johnson at the, maybe a Dennis Kucinich at the federal level that's pro-liberty. But it seems that, you know, as, you know, one of the things that a lot of libertarians argue for is, oh, we need to bring the power back to states' rights or to local governments. But what good does that do us if our local governments are completely antagonistic to liberty? Hey, are you on the line, Connor?
I am. How's it going?
It's going good. So tell us about the Boyack review today. You're discussing local politicians.
Yeah, and I thought it'd be good to start with a question just to kind of pick people's brains and lead them in the direction I'm trying to go. So my question at the outset is this: is tyranny or theft any more tolerable when done by your neighbor than by a stranger 1,000 miles away? Right? I think people universally would say no, because theft is theft and tyranny is tyranny. But I find in my observations of you know, the political process and people's political involvement that we strongly, collectively object to tyranny or theft when done by the federal government, right? It's really easy, especially on constitutional grounds, to wrap ourselves in the flag, whether of the United States or the Gadsden flag or what have you, and oppose a federal government that's trying to centrally plan our lives and intervene into the economy and tax us and regulate us and impose massive bureaucracies upon us. But I don't see the same consistency when applied to the state and to the local level. True that with the federal level we have the Constitution as kind of the focal point on which to mount an opposition to these things, but on a principled basis, if something is wrong at the federal level, that probably means it's probably a good indication that it might be wrong at the state and local level as well. So I think you had it right that, you know, we often say states' rights. I used to be a member of the Constitution Party. I used to call myself a constitutionalist until one day I realized that that term doesn't have any meaning at any level lower than the federal government. I know plenty of constitutionalists who support all sorts of awful government policies at a state or local level. You know, you say you're a constitutionalist and, okay, you have kind of a general sense of what you want the federal government to do, but then apply it to the state or the local level. What are you trying to support? So what I want to get into, Jake, today is my contention that, you know, the vast majority, if not almost every single candidate for city council, just to take that level of government as an example, is in one to one degree or another, at least, an enemy to liberty. And to do this, I want to give a couple examples. I live in Lehigh, and it's kind of an interesting thing. When you talk about central planning, in and of itself, it's kind of undergone a bit of a metamorphosis. Historically, central planning was more on moral grounds, right? So like in Lehigh, in fact, it's still in the municipal code, such things as that it's illegal to spit on the sidewalk. It's illegal for any male individual to insult or insolently or offensively speak to or address any female person in a public place or on a street.
Which is strange, because that's in stark contrast to the First Amendment.
Sure, sure. But yeah, so this is evidence of central planning on moral grounds. At least historically, this happened far more often. You know, many of these things linger in code today, but they were much bigger in past days. You know,
you couldn't curse at a female on a public street, even if, and I'm could peeve some people here, even if they deserved it.
Yeah, not in Lehigh. You'd be given a misdemeanor if they actually applied this silly law. You know, it's illegal to operate on Sunday a dance hall, a skating rink, a bowling alley, a billiard hall or pool hall, racetrack, shooting gallery, carnival, or any other kind of amusement on Sunday in Lehigh. You have to license your dog, otherwise it's a misdemeanor with up to $50 or 30 days in jail. There's curfews for minors. So at least historically, these things were far more prevalent from my studies that cities and government would regulate moral things to all sorts of degrees without any concern for the individual. Their goal was to kind of centrally plan their quote-unquote community. I think in our day it's changed a little bit, whereas in the past it was more on moral grounds, and even though these things, again, still kind of usually linger in the code if they haven't yet been repealed, today I think it's more economic. We have governments centrally planning, but you see, you know, I spent earlier this week a good amount of time looking at all sorts of city council candidate pages, web pages, and so many of them were saying, oh, I'm a good businessman, and we need someone to attract business, and they use these kind of, you know, words that are impregnated with meaning that I think few people understand, that when you say you want a government official to attract business, they don't go and ask please, they go and offer them something. And what they go and offer them is your money, your taxes, some sort of tax incentive. And so, you know, I say that central planning in and of itself is not a bad thing. You and I, Jake, centrally plan. We plan our own lives. We know our interests. We know our desires for improving our lives and the lives of our families, those over whom we have stewardship. We can plan those things, and that's moral and it's efficient. But when an elected official or unelected official claims to understand the very desires of his constituents and centrally plan their lives and guide what businesses they can conduct and when and how, that's, I think, where it becomes offensive. And even when packaged in flowery terms of trying to improve our community and keep the public peace and things of that sort, when you really boil it down to it, they're engaging in what I would contend is an immoral practice of telling me what I can and cannot do, even when my peaceful actions do no harm or infringe upon no one else's liberty. So, you know, these are usually good people. They're people that want to be involved, but I think they're, to at least some extent, misguided in that they are supporting policies at a very local, basic level that are antithetical to liberty.
So it's a local form of tyranny.
Well, so here's a perfect example that happened in Utah. You probably heard about this. Maybe you talked about it. I don't know. A few weeks ago, it hit the Associated Press that in Orem, there was this elderly man who for years has grown pumpkins on a piece of property outside of the incorporated city of Orem on some farm ground out there, and then he would sell them in front of his home. The neighbors knew and loved him. They had long bought their pumpkins from him. It supplemented, if I remember correctly, half of his yearly income for him to be able to pay his bills and things. Friendly old fellow. And the city threw the book at him and shut him down and said he could not do it because of zoning ordinances. So huge public outcry. Associated Press picked up the article and the city backed down, at least for 1 year. They're going to try and work it over until the next year. My wife and I went and bought our pumpkins from him just in a show of support for what a silly and egregious abuse of power to interrupt and impose penalties upon the peaceful economic commerce and practices of an individual. So, you know, it's interesting. You call something like that tyranny, which I think it ultimately is. Clearly, we're not comparing it to much more massive scales of tyranny that we've seen throughout history by full-on dictatorships. But they share a common element in that you are imposing one human being, the control of one human being upon another. And even when done by an elected official, I don't think that necessarily makes it better, because those powers have not been authoritatively delegated, I would contend, and therefore for city officials to be engaging in stuff like this and throwing around these laws and let alone enforcing them, I think ultimately is immoral.
Yeah, I can't disagree. That is such a tragedy. I saw it in passing. I didn't talk about it. I'm glad you brought it up. I mean, here's a guy who's just growing pumpkins. I mean, it's not even anything that's, like, controversial. It's pumpkins, and he can't sell them. And, you know, it's so sad because this is, here, like you said, this is a guy that half of his income. I mean, anybody out there listening, if they could imagine, well, except maybe through the IRS having half their income taken, if they could imagine a scenario where half of their income was taken away by the state, they'd be outraged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. What I think we have here is an interesting comparison. I was thinking of back in high school, right? You have these kids running for student council or student government, and they promise all sorts of things, right? Better selection of food for lunch and longer recess and, you know, better candy in the vending machines. And they throw out all these promises to try and win votes when, more likely than not, they never have the power or authority to carry through and fulfill the promises that they're trying to make to people, right? It's a very common thing. At least it was back when I was in school. The problem that we have is that we have city council candidates and people all throughout all levels of government trying to attract votes by promising things that, unfortunately, in this case, they can actually follow through on, right? If they say, we want to throw more money at schools or bridges or or, you know, a community center or a pool or parks or what have you, they have the power, unfortunately, to tax us to do that. And I think that's unfortunate.
Yeah, this is a very good topic. We're right in the middle of the Boyack Review. Come back after this break, talking about local level tyranny with Connor Boyack. Come on back. Mental Self Defense Radio, K-Talk, the voice of Utah. All right, welcome back, Mental Self Defense Radio. I'm your host, Jake Shannon. We are in the middle of the Boyack Review. Connor is talking about local tyranny, or at least local politicians that are antagonistic towards liberty. Connor, during the break, I kind of was thinking about what you're talking about, and it seems like Utah is actually quite rife with this kind of thing between, you know, like... the Broovies. I don't know if you heard about that. They showed some movie that had nudity, and they were serving beer, and they got a huge fine.
Right.
These unlicensed hair braiders, even the Institute for Justice is involved. What else? You know, obviously all the weird liquor laws and whatnot around here. Mm-hmm. So it seems Utah is kind of rife for this. It is kind of like what you were talking about with the Constitution Party. They're fine with freedom on the federal level, but it's okay if we strangle out and tell you what you can or can't do on the local level.
Right, and I don't know that I can speak with a good amount of authority how it is in other states in comparison. It may just be as bad or worse. So relative to other states, I don't know. But frankly, I'm fairly unconcerned with that. If it's wrong, it's wrong. Whether it's less wrong or happening more or less than another state. You know, when my wife and I recently bought a plot of land that we plan to build on in the future, and when we were looking around of where to move, she actually called around all sorts of different cities to ask specifically on two things, because we knew that cities regulate on it. The first was if they allow chickens, and the second was if they allow bees, right? This is like in Wasatch, you know, in the valley. Historically, there's been tons of farmers here. This is kind of Utah's heritage is, you know, cows and bees. And
yeah, the
you
beehive
know,
what, state for
right, let alone the actual motto of the state. It was amazing to me, Jake, to see all of these cities totally cracking down with all of these obscene regulations. You know, some wouldn't let you have any. Some would only let you have 5 chickens. Some you had to have a minimum half-acre lot. It was absurd. And so it was like this jigsaw that we had to work through to determine, well, okay, do we just want to go ahead and practice civil disobedience and, you know, give the city a middle finger and not really care what happens? Do we care about this? What do we want to do? But you know, zoning ordinances like that, I think, are one of the most egregious abuses of power, imposing, you know, the will of this elected body that claims to have this authority upon private property owners. I've had the occasion to go to many city council meetings for all sorts of business, primarily dealing with the development that I live in, and it's always given me that kind of this, you know, curl in my gut that I can't, you know, seem to stomach very well when these people would go to the city, these business owners, these landowners, the developers, and they would basically beg for permission from the city council to build, to do what they wanted to do on their land, right? Whether it's just creating a parking lot here or adding a thorough, you know, a little street here, or if we want to go ahead and build, everything requires permission from the city. So you've got a planning commission first, and then you've got the city council after that, and you basically go and grovel to the government asking for their permission to use your property in the peaceful way that you plan to do. I find that ultimately, you know, in the long end of things, completely offensive, right? Who is this elected body, even if, yes, they are elected, to tell me what I can and can't do on my own property that I've paid for? You know, it's these zoning ordinances that I think are just highly egregious and, you know, impose the will of the city, the collective, upon the individual. And I think that's completely in the reverse. I think in the name of creating or maintaining or improving community, these things are, in fact, destroying community. I think it's the wrong way to go about things. Like so many other things, it should be left up to the peaceful actions in the market, and government's role should really only be in punishing any aggression and coercion of anyone who has done harm to another person. But to the extent that I just want to build a building on my land or develop it a certain way or put a little, you know, sell pumpkins on my front lawn for crying out loud, I think liberty requires that we allow it.
So you're pretty disappointed when you looked across at least city councilmen in their positions. You know, this is maybe speaks to one of the things that, we can actually do, maybe. I don't know, because I know myself personally, if I see some politician, it doesn't matter what level, if it's federal, state, local, whatever, if they put on there they're a businessman and they're going to do things good for business, to me that always seems to be some sort of euphemism for crony capitalism. You know, it doesn't seem that like they're saying that they're for laissez-faire, that they're going to get in there and the good things that they're going to do for business is to get out of everybody's hair. It seems like it's the opposite. They're going to be wheeling and dealing and doing these another awful euphemism is this public private partnership. I mean, that's just another word for fascism, but it's nice. It's like you know, collateral damage instead of murder. You know.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, at the state level, we have the Governor's Office of Economic Development, which is the prime example of exactly what you're talking about. It's these bureaucrats with the governor's oversight who throw around tax money like there's no tomorrow and picking winners and losers in the marketplace. I actually had the opportunity recently to talk to an individual who works there, and he actually agreed with my criticisms. Which I found kind of interesting, and he didn't really have a reply to.
I mean, that's the thing with politicians. They may just be agreeing to your face. Meanwhile, they turn around and sign a bunch of checks from the tax coffers in which we have to pay. We have no choice.
Sure, and this individual wasn't so much a politician as he was on the bureaucrat level. And to his credit, I think he sincerely agreed with the principles underlying my criticism. He just wasn't well-versed enough in those criticisms to even contemplate what the alternative would look like without government intervention. I think that's the case with a lot of people. They think that this is kind of normal, and it's how you do things. Again, here in Lehigh, people lauded the arrival of Adobe. They're actually building the Adobe facilities right next to Cabela's right now, right? And that one, the city of Lehigh is giving them a $17.5 million kickback, which is just totally offensive to me, that they're playing fast and loose with tax money. They're picking winners and losers. How does that make competitors who can't qualify for that because maybe they already have been here in Lehigh for a while and they're not new business coming in? It's just so silly to me why these people who seek election to govern instead think that they are seeking election to become a business, use our tax money or the promises of paying less taxes in the future, maybe using those tax incentives to try and shape the city the way they want it to, when really the city should be shaped by the individuals who live within it and our decisions and interactions and productivity, not the you know, imposed will of the elected few upon the masses. That's something I object to.
Yeah, I always look at these politicians that come from a business background. You know, they look at it like a return on an investment. Oh, okay, I spent $1 million to campaign, and then I get $20 million in special favors to all my buddies and my own particular investments. We got Susie in Sugar House. You okay to take a caller, Connor?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Okay, so Susie, welcome to the show.
Yeah, could you just address HR 1126 for me, and I'll get off the air.
Well, what is that? I don't even know. I don't follow.
Well,
that
I called up. I heard it today on Kim's show, and then I called up Jason Chaffetz's office, and Mike Lee didn't. They didn't answer the phone in Washington about, I guess, giving property back to these citizens, property that isn't okay, like, you know, not Moab and places like that. She said the intern in Jason Chaffetz's office. It's basically giving. You know, like people can buy the property that are, local citizens, not overseas, you know, people that are from other countries.
Oh, and about the home buyer thing that Mike Lee is doing.
Can you explain that to me and get it clear? Because the way she didn't know, I don't know. Is this good or bad is what I'm asking.
Do you know what she's talking about, Connor?
I just Googled it while she was talking, and it's not the one that you're referring to where it's the, you know, $500,000 thing and the Chinese can get some land or whatever that was.
That was shocking to me that was Mike Lee's deal.
Yeah, he co-sponsored it with, who was
Schumer,
it?
Schumer, wasn't it?
Maybe it was.
I think, Schumer's a bad guy. I mean, man, what's
this one is that she's referring to is sponsored by Chaffetz, and it's selling off certain federal lands in a bunch of states, Utah included, that was previously designated as being suitable for disposal. So it looks like it's just trying to free up some of the, you know, the federal government owns like 2/3 of the state of Utah.
Right.
It owns, you know, about the same of the entire United States, the land contained within it. So I don't know the specifics, but if the description is accurate of what it contains, I think that's something that's good because the federal government should not be owning land. It should just be governing within it.
Okay, that's what she said to me. I had to get this clear in my head. Okay. Thanks.
Did that answer for you, Susie?
Yes, it clears my,
Okay, yeah, and this is and don't be a stranger, Susie. Thanks for the call. This is one of those things that, and look, I am probably one of the loudest critics of Jason Chaffetz in this state, but, you know, granted, a broken clock can still be right twice a day. This is actually, I think, a good thing that because this really goes back to property rights, right, Connor? I mean, it kind of the big problem here is this is like the case with the Utah Highway Patrol and the crosses and having these crucifixes on public land. If it was on private property, it wouldn't even be an issue.
And that's exactly right. In fact, I was listening during that part of your show, and really so much of the contention that we have in government boils down to simply getting government out of the equation, right? If there was no public lands, public roads, these things wouldn't be a question. If the roads were privately owned, they would be better maintained, they would be more efficient, and, you know, if the company or whoever owned it wanted to allow crosses on the side of it, that would be completely up to them. It's when we put so much power in government's hands that it then becomes a simple popularity contest for us to determine, you know, who's going to win, and then the winners get to impose their will upon the losers, and then it just goes back and forth, and it's just pure majoritarian control. It's pure democracy, which so many people despise, but they don't realize that, you know, they're clamoring for democracy, just they want their side to win and not the other side. And my, you know, I got my book coming out in a month, almost in a, to the day, in a month, Latter-day Liberty. And
What's the website? Because I know that you also, like, you're giving away an iPod or an iPad or something.
iPad,
right?
I'll briefly mention that and then go back to my point. So for those who haven't heard yet, I've got a book coming out. It's called Latter-day Liberty, A Gospel Approach to Government and Politics. It's been endorsed by all sorts of people. I've got Ron Paul endorsed it and Tom Woods and
that's awesome.
And Jonathan Johnson of Overstock and a bunch of authors. And it's got a lot of great support already.
And who's the publisher?
The publisher is a local one here called Cedar Fort. They're one of the, I think they're one of the biggest, if not the biggest, independent LDS publishers. So you've got Deseret Book, which is owned by the LDS Church, and Cedar Fort, I think, is the biggest, if not one of the biggest independent LDS publishers. The website is LatterdayLiberty.com, and on that, the first blog post, about halfway down the page, has the details for just what you mentioned. In about a month, we're doing the big launch party. Come and get signed copies at Pioneer Book in Orem, and everyone who buys a book, for every copy you buy, you'll be entered to win an iPad or all sorts of other stuff. We've got books and movie passes and gift cards galore, but the iPad is the grand prize. So that happens in about a month.
Wow, that's exciting stuff. And so you touch on some of these issues in the forthcoming Latter-day
Liberty.
Right,
so, yeah, and specifically what I wanted to mention here is in that book, I've got a chapter on individualism, because so much of in my book of what I try and do is try and take us back from the kind of stereotypes and the biases that we have towards these words, right? Individualism is a word that has a lot of negative connotation when people use it. And so I try and contextualize it a little more and say this is what those who employ the term actually mean when they're using it. So you take, in this case, where you've got, you know, the few regulating the many, and you've got this, you know, government, even at a local level, controlling and regulating and zoning. That is collectivism. It is claiming that, you know, we can try and regulate things for everyone rather than letting the individuals peacefully and productively decide what interests they want to pursue and how they want to pursue it. And so anytime you have this central planning, whether at a local or a federal level, that's collectivism. It's ultimately immoral in that you are imposing upon peaceful people things to which they did not agree simply by, you know, even if they did elect that person who's doing it, the fundamental morality that is underlying this process requires that the few cannot impose their will upon the many unless there's explicit delegated authority, which we don't have in our form of government. So ultimately, the individualism that it boils down to, which I argue in my book, is it's a moral individualism. It's not the stereotypical, you know, selfish individualism where, you know, we're saying screw you to everyone and we'll do what we want and, you know, harm others in the process. It's a peaceful and it's a moral individualism in that we are free to pursue our own interests, provided that we do no harm to others. That's really the core of libertarianism, frankly. And I think it's totally absent from our government at any level, especially at the local level, when you have these regulations and zoning ordinances and things. It's pure collectivism.
Fascinating stuff. Check that out at LatterdayLiberty.com. Also, ConnorBoyack.com. Right, Connor?
Yes, sir.
All right. Hey, thanks for the great report today. Come on back tomorrow.